at times is becoming farcical. And you have to really feel for these players and management. This isn't normal in any shape or form.
For your first chance to hear Brian O'Driscoll on OTB, download the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications.
This is News Talk.
All right, it's Thursday's Off the Ball. Nathan with you until 10 o'clock this evening. We've got a busy show coming up. John Giles, as always, on the way from 7:30. He will be reflecting on a very good week for the Republic of Ireland. After 8, we're going to be joined by Cathal O'Kane of the Irish News to talk about the GAA Special Congress and the chances of proposal being that radical change to the inter-county season, of those changes actually becoming reality at Congress. Also between 8 and 9, Kavitha Davidson is going to join us. John Grugan, one of the most high-profile figures in American football, stepping down as head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders earlier this week after the New York Times released emails in which he had made homophobic and misogynistic remarks. Also accused of making racist statements as well. A huge name in the NFL and obviously a major storm in American sports. So we're going to be talking to Kavitha on that around about 8:30. And then on the football show, Kelly Cates is going to be with us, of course, of Sky Sports fame. And we're going to be chatting about her career and also, of course, of growing up in the Dalgleish household, about Hillsborough as well. She was at Hillsborough in that day in 1989 and obviously dealing through the aftermath of that as a family. So well worth listening into that. Kelly Cates coming your way between 9 and 10. 53106 is the text number. Add Off the Ball if you want to get in touch on social media. Richie McCormick, good evening.
Hey, Nathan.
And Joe Malloy, good evening to you.
Hi, lads.
So, John Giles with us to put a wrap on the week. I came into the office, JP said to me, I've never seen Joe Malloy as buzzing about an Irish performance as he was about that victory over Qatar. You are a believer.
Yes, I am. Yeah. I think it was worrying in March. It was very worrying. But if you don't see in the last two windows how things have changed and the way in which they're changing, then I can't help you, because the manner of the performance in Baku was very positive, because it was that bit more pragmatic. And I was quite happy to see that, because it was what the game required in certain places. And then in advance of the game against Qatar, I was talking to you and Stewie on the show. We were previewing the game, and Stewie rightly made the point that teams at the Aviva Stadium who come and try and sit in are teams who we've struggled to break them down far too often, not least against Azerbaijan at home even just last month. And so the way in which Ireland played on Tuesday was so encouraging. I mean, shout a game at me. I can't think of a game under certainly McCarthy most recently, certainly under O'Neill and Keane, and then probably to a large extent under Trapattoni, because he was trying to play a different way. But I can't think of a game where we took a team apart like that, where we played football like that. And I tweeted, Nathan, that something really good is now happening to this team under Kenny. Some people interpreted that tweet as me saying Ireland are perfect in every way and going to win the World Cup. But something really good is happening. That was different. The manner of that performance was different. I don't think we should be reticent about saying that. I think there's almost now sort of, you need to be an apologist to say that you think that what Kenny is doing is good. That was exceptional by Irish standards the other night. And I'd make no bones about saying it. The way they took that team apart was really, really promising. Doesn't mean they're going to hammer Luxembourg. Doesn't mean Portugal won't come to Dublin and win. I get all that, but it's the nature of the performance for me that I was really excited. Really excited. Yeah, I was. That was different.
It was the relentlessness that stood out for me at the Aviva, that from the first minute when Ogbeni won that free kick, Ireland were on the front foot. And even as recent as last Saturday against Azerbaijan, when they went in front, they sat back and they let Azerbaijan take control of the game. Whereas actually there seemed to be a sense of we need to keep pushing, and maybe getting a second goal so early makes it a whole lot easier to do it, because you know you can take a few risks and it's not going to be overly damaging. If you were to concede one goal, you still have the lead. But it felt as though they'd even learned from Saturday to Tuesday that a big issue on Saturday was that gap between the midfield and the defence. And even though there wasn't really a midfield on Tuesday with Hendrick and Howard, there was no holding player, watching Shane Duffy constantly trying to step forward to make that gap. So when the midfielders went forward, Duffy was pushing right up. He was coming in front of his other two centre half partners a lot of the time, so he would be able to pounce quickly if they lost the ball. Like, that's what Ireland need to be. That's what almost all modern teams are right now. They're ready to win that turnover ball high up. And like the third goal, because it was a friendly, it probably won't be ranked among the great Irish goals. But if this was a proper competitive game, that's the way we would be talking about this. And Duffy's intervention, I saw you talking about his transformation, like the skip past the defender. When you watch the behind the goals angle, and Duffy skips past the Qatari midfielder, and he, for the next 5 seconds, he's got his head up the whole time with the ball at his feet. He's looking. Nobody makes the run. Just plays a simple little ball to his left-hand side, then continues his run, brings a defender with him, makes a space, and Callum Robinson and Jeff Hendrick link up, and Robinson's able to score his hat-trick. So I agree. It does. I was surprised again. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised to see his future isn't secure. Decisions still to be made. November is going to be a big month. But there's rarely been an Ireland manager where there's been a dead cat bounce where it's all been going horribly wrong, they've come back, and then it's all just disintegrated again and we've decided to get rid. Like, the low point, it feels, has come and gone at this stage, and this team now are on the upward curve where players are actually fit. Almost all their best players are available. There's a consistency of selection, and I don't know, Richie, I haven't really ever believed there's been a rush to get the new contract signed, considering it's all the way till the end of next June. And in a way, I was surprised by Stephen Kenny's comments because, you know, after a win, I thought he'd be trying to put the pressure on to get the contract done now. Whereas, you know, he's sort of saying, well, I know I'm going to be here for these Nations League games next June.
Yeah.
Judge me on that. But like, this is a team that is clearly progressing. And the FAI, like, they don't need this constantly, every single day, every week of, if it doesn't be Portugal, if they don't back that up against Luxembourg, he's gone. Like, they need to get out of that cycle.
Yeah, I would imagine that will be sorted pretty quickly after the review that is coming after the pair of November games. And it's probably an issue that Kenny didn't want to publicly push, and nor did the FAI, because they both addressed it in the previous window. And Jonathan Hill had spoken to Stephen Doyle shortly after those games, and they said, listen, the review happens as normally after the end of a cycle, after the end of an international season, and we'll discuss it then. And that's when they're going to do it. And that's fine. That's fair enough. And that's when I'd imagine it'll be sorted. I'd say it'll be sorted fairly quickly, and there might be talk of extending his contract beyond that. But there is, like there's all the sense in the world, obviously, of extending that contract, but like there's this weird psychosis still out there that because you give him any kind of praise, even for doing a decent job against pretty scratch opposition the other night, that, you know, we're fanboys, or that we're cheerleaders, or that we're pushing some kind of Kenny agenda.
The scratch opposition, Richie, is the key. Like, Qatar aren't really scratch opposition. They're a step above probably a San Marino or a Gibraltar. They're in that kind of Armenia type level where you make them look scratch opposition quickly by scoring twice on. That's what you got to do in those games.
The FIFA rankings are a hilarious one as well. People kind of fret about them when we drop to 50 whatever, and yet they don't mean anything when we beat a team that are slightly above us in them. And we have to remember that Qatar have been, they're not exactly carbon footprint friendly with the way they played matches over the last year, because they bounced around CONMEBOL, CONCACAF, the Asian Cup, obviously enough, which they won. We have to underline that as well. And they've played, what was it, a dozen games in between playing us in March and playing us again there the other night. So they were, you know, they're not without practice. They know each other pretty well. And contrary to the point, actually, I know Stewie was pointing it out and yourselves were pointing out that when teams come to sit in, the indication was going into Tuesday night's game that Qatar actually don't sit in, that they're a team that go for it from the off, and regardless of their formation, I think it was a 3-5-2, actually are quite happy to go and chase a game and take away the scruff of the neck. So they did leave themselves open by the manner of their play. But the fact that you can't say anything in praise of Kenny now for fear of the regular people saying you're fanboys, you're apologists, you're this, you're that, is a bit odd. It seems that people are only able to see the football through the prism of English football, whereby a couple of bad results equals sack the manager, a couple of good results equals like he's doing okay and he'll survive until the next couple of bad results, maybe, you know, who knows. But that needs to change. The actual thought process around how we judge managers, and it isn't just Stephen Kenny, it's everybody. The thought process about how we judge performance, especially on the international stage, really has to change, because the calendar is odd and it's changing, it's evolving. It's only going to get stranger from, you know, the intervention of FIFA in the next couple of years. So you kind of have to just buckle down, take each window as it comes without wanting to, you know, get bogged down in catchphrases, and see the bigger picture and see how teams are progressing over the course of a 12 months, or how they're progressing over the course of a 24 months, because a 2-game, a 3-game window isn't a good enough judge. And to Joe's point, there's definitely a case that this team from March, and even from a point before that to this current point now, there's no doubting they've made an improvement and a vast improvement at that. And anybody who says otherwise is just looking for trouble and spoiling for a row.
Yeah, and look, that's football, I guess, as well. Like, people are always spoiling for a row, for right or for wrong, and like, results weren't good. And there were extenuating factors for that. Obviously, with COVID to start, there was no momentum. But when you lose at home to Luxembourg, there almost has to be a fallout to something like that. But I think it has obviously transformed since then. Text in, congrats to Ireland. So good to see, and to see a reward for patience. But as an aside, what the hell is going to happen to Qatar at the World Cup? It could be so dreadful. Qatar will be Mauricio Pochettino managing them by the time the World Cup comes around. They're going to be the most experienced team in the history of a World Cup. I mentioned it a few times in commentary. Like, their front two are 24 and 25. Think of 130 caps between them and about 60 international goals. They will be the most well-prepared team there's ever been going to a World Cup. They're not going to do anything at it, you'd imagine, but it's probably unlikely they'll be overly humiliated. But does anyone care?
No harm if they are.
Exactly, I was just going to say.
And to be honest with you, I wouldn't be surprised, given the, because they are on a bad run of recent results. The last four or five games haven't been great. I wouldn't be surprised if their naturalisation process over the course of the next 12 months doesn't become a little bit lax in who they're able to take on board and suddenly get a passport.
53106 is the text number. Where are you starting tonight, Richie?
We'll start with, I suppose, an ancillary points to those games during midweek. West Brom manager Valerian Ismail says he'll speak with Callum Robinson regarding his vaccine stance. The Republic of Ireland striker revealed last week, of course, that he so far refused the jab despite catching COVID twice. Robinson has returned to his club after scoring 5 goals in the past 2 Ireland matches. West Brom played Birmingham at the weekend, and Ismail has stressed the importance of getting vaccinated.
First of all, we don't need to stigmatise a person who took the decision to not get the vaccine. I think it's important to understand why. But from the other side, I can understand the discussion. I got the vaccine. I'm full vaccinated. I think it's really important to make sure that we protect ourselves, we protect our family, and especially as a football player, you are in an environment with a lot of people, and to make sure that you can protect your teammate as well. So I think it's a thin line, and it's all about communication to give the confidence to the player. I'm very happy that the club provide a lot of appointment vaccination possibility for our player. So we have at the minute the vast majority of the player vaccinated, so it's a great feeling for us. But you will have always person take the own decision. We need to respect that. We can only support and try to explain and to reinforce the message how important it is to get the vaccination. But it doesn't mean that we have to be now negative or to go on the person. So we just need to respect that and to continue to communicate.
So will you hope to change his mind then? You continue talking to him and any other players?
Yes, I think the only way, it's like we made this week. I think we the majority of the player got the jab, and this is the only way. And I think the other player will follow and show that it's exactly the direction we need, because COVID is still there, and it's not only about the player. It's about the schedule. If when a player is positive, maybe the next one need to go in quarantine. If you get the full vaccination, you don't need to go in quarantine, so you can carry on with the schedule. You can carry on with the training session, and it's important now to analyze all the situation and to be professional from one side, and to make sure we can protect ourselves, the family, and the teammate.
Yeah, I think that will probably be the turning point over the next few weeks and months for a lot of the footballers, that life will just become that bit too difficult for them and too many complications if they aren't vaccinated. Valerian Ismail seems like a pretty smart man, Joe. Comes across quite well.
Very. Yeah, very. Very impressive, because I'm sure he knew that his words would be closely watched, and so you're speaking with a lot of pressure on you. Interesting, I was just listening to somebody with like behavioural science background during the week, and they were saying it's generally not a good thing when the debate centers around an individual like Robinson. It's not helpful. People tend to take sides. The authorities want to get away from that kind of thing. And, you know, it's never great when one person is stigmatized and, you feel a certain sympathy for them, even when you wish they would follow the experts. I think the very simple point is listen to medical expertise. You know, that's what we've done. That's what people in the main have done. So I don't really know why you wouldn't, but that's where we are.
You're listening to the News Round. This is with thanks, as always, to Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Confirmation that the Unite the Union Cup is back, Richie?
It is, yeah. After a year of hibernation, the final of this year's Unite the Union Cup is going to be played at the Aviva on December the 4th. The cross-border competition had been cocooned for a year because of COVID-19. The Danske Bank Premiership semi-final involving Linfield and Coleraine, that's going to be played on November 23rd. The eventual top two in the SSC or Tristy Premier Division will square off when the season comes to an end. The winners are going to get $60,000, losing finalists $40,000, and the losing semi-finalists are going to get $25,000 each.
So obviously the Irish women's rugby team missed out on qualification for the next World Cup, but a couple of fixtures lined up.
Yeah, they're going to get the grieving process underway, I guess, on the pitch. They've got a pair of autumn internationals lined up. They're going to play the United States and Japan next month. The venues are still to be decided. The games will be Ireland's first since they missed out on qualification for next year's World Cup.
You had this in the news round yesterday, I think. This is a pretty horrific story. The murder of Agnes Tirup, a two-time World Championship bronze medalist. There's some further information on it today.
Yeah, police in Kenya are asking her husband, Emmanuel Rotich, to come forward. They say they're closing in on the killer of Agnes Tirup. The two-time World Championship bronze medalist was found dead at her home yesterday with stab wounds to her neck. It's been reported that her husband, Rotich, called relatives crying and asking God to forgive him for what he'd done. Police are looking to speak to him regarding Tirup's death.
So Andy Mourne has revealed his reasons for taking the Leitrim football manager's job, revealing this exclusively on the latest episode of the Football Pod. How did they manage to get him? Was the reasoning that he just wasn't getting enough airtime anymore in the Football Pod due to Tommy Rooney's ever-burgeoning ego, meaning basically it's the Tommy Rooney pod with two other lads?
Surprisingly, that didn't come up. I think he's just being polite. He's probably saving it for the newspaper column to bring that one up. But the former player of the year with Mayo, confirmed, of course, as Terry Hyland's replacement recently. And on the latest edition of the Football Pod, Moran told of his excitement at getting away from Tommy Rooney and taking on that Leitrim gig.
It just felt right. I suppose I had a lot of communication with John O'Mahony.
How did it come about, Andy? So tell us how it came about, first off.
Listen, over the last couple of weeks, there's been various phone calls floating around, different, I suppose, teams talking. But the one that felt right, honestly, and the one that felt right for me, just with everything, my family life, my working life, where Leitrim are, where I'm at. Like, if you think about this, I'm a young coach. I make no bones about it. I'm young. I'm inexperienced. I'm getting a team which are willing to kind of do whatever it takes to improve. And I'm willing to do whatever it takes to improve. There'll be an absolute loads of mistakes along the way. But the key thing is that you're learning and you're having fun along the way. I think the two, both me and my management team and the players that are there, I think we complement each other quite well.
Have you met the group? Have you met some of the players?
No, I just met some of the leadership group that were talking to the county board. Met them, very good people. I had a lot of communication actually from college teams since to compliment the players that are there and to reassure me that these players are actually really good players if they're given the right platform. And my job then is to win and just give them the right platform and see can we push it on a bit. But listen, I think it's going to be. It's going to be a really good 2022 and can't wait to get training.
Yeah, can't wait to see, Joe, how Andy Mourne gets on at Leitrim. Mm. Really, it does feel, though, that for Andy Mourne, like next Saturday week and that special congress is absolutely vital for the opportunity to progress. Otherwise, you're sitting down in a month's time when the draw is made for the championship and Leitrim are out against Mayo or Galway first day out and you're starting on the back foot straight away.
Yeah, true. Either way, it'll be about the league. I guess they just hope that the league is in the summer for them. I think it's a great appointment. I think it's a really shrewd appointment. Anytime I've spoken to Andy, his analysis has been spot on, like really, really insightful. And you think he's going to pitch up in front of that Leitrim team and he's going to be able to say to them, well, I've come from a background here where over the last decade, I know what it takes physically to get yourself to a point where you can match it with the best team in the country. So I know what you have to do. Here's what you have to do. If we do this physically, we'll be at a level. And skill-wise, you know, we've got from a point in Mayo where our conversion percentage was X and now it was into the 60s under pressure. I know how you do that. This is what you do. I would think for Leitrim players, that's really exciting to hear that. I mean, someone who's been there and seen it done under Horan in particular. I'd say he's desperately hoping Proposal B happens, because as you said, otherwise it's definitely less exciting to be drawn against Mayo in the first round, no matter how much progress they might make in the first 6 months.
Yeah, and obviously viewing this as a real opportunity to learn what it's all about actually on the sideline of an inter-county setup, I'm sure there are ambitions down the track that he may end up at one of those or end up as Mayo, and he could have done the thing as the legend and hang around and maybe go in with James Horan behind the scenes and be the next man in. But actually, I think Andy, from listening to him on the football pod, realises there's a lot that goes on with being an inter-county manager and the politics of it and dealing with players and organising sessions, that's something you need to learn. That's something, if you are to go into Mayo, you need to be fully prepared for. So for Leitrim to get the full benefits of that, I think you're right. It could well be, there could be two Andy Morans. It could be Roy Keane. There could be another side to Andy Moran that we've just never seen. He walks in there and his tone when he's talking about the 10 years and what he's seen with Mayo is very different. Like, lads, What I've done. What medals? There's nothing throwing them in there, lads. He's just walking in there. The ego can't handle the fact that not every player is at his level. We just don't know.
Well, if Tommy Rooney hasn't brought out the anger yet, think it's safe to say, you know, it's well controlled. One quick point to mention on Proposal B, we had Enda McGinley on last night, and I thought we were going to get into the nuts and bolts of, like, the whole thing. And actually, he threw me at the start because he said, yeah, you know, there's the media discussion and everyone's very on top of Proposal B and likes it. And then I'm talking to people on provincial councils and lots of delegates who will be voting in like 8 days' time. They're not really too sure of the details of this thing. So I don't know. I wonder. I'm thinking of Brexit and Donald Trump.
I think,
you know, the polls may be misleading us here, Nathan, because it's very trendy in the media to be all about B.
Well, we're talking about that after 8 o'clock. Cathair O'Kane from the Irish News, who would very much be aware of, think of the feelings on the ground and how Congress does work. And he's not fully convinced by it either. I think he, reading his articles, he thinks the change should come, but maybe this isn't the exact type of change. And again, it might be a case of Congress just kicking it down the road a little bit again. And can we come up with a better solution? But there is no perfect solution. We all know that. Just go do it. It will be devastating, I would imagine, for so many inter-county players if this doesn't happen. But Enda McGinley summed it up. We just don't know. We know that the players want it. We know that the GPA have surveyed the players, that the players who are right there want this to happen. But Congress is a whole different thing. And I think we've spoken about it before. We've rang an awful lot of people. We've tried to make as many calls as possible. And anytime you speak to the players, they're so passionate about this that they want it true. And then you talk to people who are in and around and on the committees, and they're not quite sure what the fuss is about and what all the debate is about, and it may happen, it may not happen, but either way, it'll be a championship and we'll all just get on with our lives. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting week to see, is there an intervention from Croke Park? Is there a turning point in this where actually those people who don't understand fully what's happening are swayed? You kind of hope there is, because the more you read about it, the more you think about it, the more exciting it actually is.
Yeah, agree totally. So, look, I guess they have a week to get on top of things and be convinced. I mean, the financial question mark has been answered now. I think 10 million extra in gate receipts, which was always going to be the case. And we're talking about more games here, so obviously it was just a case of distribution at that point. So I don't know what the strongest argument against it is. Maybe that's the way to frame this. Jim McGuinness is bemoaning the loss of the provincial championships, and I get that. But beyond that, I don't know what the argument for the status quo is. Really don't.
No, well, we'll be talking about that with Cathair O'Kane after 8 o'clock. Richie, JP's telling me to go, but I know you're going to be so upset if you don't get your 10 seconds of Bohemians loving.
Yeah, Georgie Kelly has become the fourth Bohemians player in as many months to be named the SSE Airtricity Soccer Writers Player of the Month. His 4 goals in the month of September saw him pick up the gong.
This is outrageous, Richie. This 4 goals players in a row. This is outrageous. I'm on in the Soccer Writer, so I have a vote in this, and I don't vote most months because
you don't write.
But not just writers, there's broadcasters, there's everybody and anybody on this. And that's been a debate on the Soccer Writers, I can assure you, about the name of the Soccer Writers. But I don't vote because I'm not at all League of Ireland games, so I don't feel I should really be voting. But I feel I'm going to have to start voting because there's clearly a massive media bias towards Bohemians around Irish media between yourself, Rory. Yeah. Like, there's dozens of you and you're hijacking the vote, and it's completely unfair to other talents within the league.
Long may that continue.
On that note, Richie, thank you. Joe, good stuff. We'll talk to you in a while. You're going to be back for the football show after 9.
Yep.
All right, time to let you win some money.
Your chance to win big. News Talk's cash machine.
So today there was €6,375.92 in the cash machine, but we had no winner. The person we picked at random did answer the call when we rang them just after 3 o'clock, but they wouldn't play. True story. Okay, I want to know more about this true story. I'll try and bring you that full true story after 8 o'clock if we can get it through legal. So the €6,375.92 rolls over until tomorrow. Make sure you're listening to New Stock Breakfast at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning when we'll tell you exactly how much you could win. And for God's sake, answer the phone. And if you do answer the phone within the five rings, just take the money. Anyways, 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. John Giles up next.
The News Round on Off The Ball
with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.